Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, it's November 15th. It's Monday morning. It's literally 10 o'clock in the morning. And we've not been operating off the Blog Talk Radio platform for about a month, hoping to engage a different process, basically as a podcast. But we've now been able to recognize that we can not only incorporate Blog Talk Radio as our main platform, but from there, whatever we do live here, we will also be able to move on to Stitcher and a few other radio outlets. And so you'll be able to hear us on a much broader level. And I look really forward to engaging people in a much better way. We had difficulty initially putting together the podcast. We've been trying to put that together for the last month, but the people we engaged, unfortunately, were not doing a good job, and we lost all those recordings. So I just didn't want to go through it anymore, and on Sunday, we resurrected our operation with Blog Talk, and so I was very thrilled about that. Anyway, we're expecting a call from John Bailey from the White Plains Citizenet Reporter, and hopefully he'll be able to join us. If he doesn't join us in a few more minutes, we'll just simply forget him. But I know that we will get a call from Michael Edelman at 10:30 this morning. He's the political analyst as well as national pundit as well. And we'll talk to him. There's a lot for him to talk about. So where shall we begin? I guess with John not calling in, it's already 2 minutes into the show. I'm going to forget about him. And we'll move into some international news that you might find interesting. This may come about as well in the United States. However, it's already come about in France. Evidently, the French are reimposing primary school mask mandates nationwide as COVID-19 cases rise. It's again become mandatory for France's elementary school children from Monday as new COVID-19 cases have topped a daily average of 10,000. So when classes let out for the weekend, 61 of France's administrative departments, or fewer than two-thirds, were subject to face mask mandates for elementary school children. As of today, all departments moved to the mask mandatory level 2 of France's COVID-19 schools protocol, with the exception of harder-hit French Guiana, which borders Brazil and remains at the protocol's strictest category level 4. Well, the move to apply the face mask mandate nationwide for the 5 grades of French elementary school children marks a policy rollback for France. It was detailed by the Education Ministry in the wake of President Emmanuel Macron's televised address to the nation last week announcing new COVID-19 measures. In late September, the government had announced the end of face masks for children in elementary school, where COVID-19 incidence rates were lowest. In early October, 47 departments or districts, however you want to say it, but the French call it departments, shed the masks, with others joining them the following week. By the time schools adjourned nationwide for a 2-week All Saints holiday on October 23rd, a full 79 departments or districts had dropped the mask requirement. A significant rise in COVID-19 cases has spurred fresh precautions, just as new detected infections in France have topped an average of 10,000 daily. So returning from holiday last Monday, school children in dozens of districts who had removed masks in October had to don them once again. And children in a fraction of those departments or districts, including Paris, have kept masks on since the school year began on September 2. Well, faced with a new pandemic surge, Macron urged seniors to get COVID-19 vaccine booster shots during his televised address to the nation last Tuesday. He announced that over 65s would lose access to France's health pass on December 15th without dose. The fifth wave, I think that's a brilliant concept, you know, demanding that people who are over 65 either will lose their health plan if they don't get topped off with the next inoculation or a booster shot by December 15th. Well, the fifth wave has begun in Europe, in the United Kingdom, in Germany, where more than 30,000 new cases are recorded daily, Macron declared. And while the president called the pandemic situation in France more favorable, he noted a 40% rise in the COVID-19 incidence rate over the previous week. Even though I know how difficult it is, he says, mask wearing will be maintained in schools for the moment, Macron announced during the speech. On the ground, the return of face masks for school children nationwide has been met with a mix of satisfaction and resignation. There's been a degree of inevitability among teachers, a kind of exhaustion or even exasperation with the way the government passes its messages along, said Stéphane Crochet, a secretary general of the SEUNSA Teachers Union. She says on Tuesday, after Macron's address, no one had really understood that masking had been reestablished everywhere, he added. For her part, Catherine Navet-Berty, a secretary general of the SGEN-CFDT Union for School Personnel, said that the new measure seems reasonable, quote unquote, above all. Continuing, it's satisfying because it's a coherent precautionary measure against the dynamic of the epidemic, she said. The objective is always to close the fewest classes possible and keep control at school and elsewhere. Ghislaine David, Secretary General of the SNUIP-FSU, the leading union of primary school personnel, noted that moving all departments to level 2 of the protocol doesn't only signify a prudent return to masking, but also means schools now need once again to stop school groups from mixing in school canteens or lunchrooms and after school activities. It's a real puzzle in a lot of schools, particularly for organizing recess breaks, Crochet had said. David also brings up another sticky issue. Certain families' acceptance of masks, which in some places is becoming more and more difficult, she said, and by going back and forth on the protocol, we're confronted by some parents who are anti-mask. Well, the nationwide mandate in France affects elementary school children aged roughly 6 to 11, a segment of the French population that remains unvaccinated. The European Medicine Agency is currently evaluating data for COVID-19 vaccines for the age group, with a decision expected on Pfizer's version sometime in December, after which France's health authority will provide its own assessment. Okay, let's go back. Oh, there he is, John Bailey himself. Good morning, John Bailey. How are you? Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Here I am.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on. I was just talking about what was happening in France, which just gravitates very much to you because you're one of the few people in Westchester County that's covering the assault that COVID-19 has had on the county. We're not doing so well, are we?
No. In fact, for the last 6 weeks, it has just been a nightmare. We have had 3,664 new cases in 6 weeks in Westchester. That's 610 a day.
Yeah.
Average.
Absolutely. Can I ask you?
And we had.
Go ahead.
We had 751 new cases last week, Sunday to Saturday, 107 a day. And
I was reporting about France because it's interesting to see something that's happening elsewhere. They're going through their fourth wave, and Europe seems to be going that way. There are new variants that have shown up. They're not so sure if they're going to be more infectious than the Delta strain, but they're concerned because the spikes on the COVID-19 is different. It's mutated somewhat differently, and yet that's a spike that connects to the human cell. So they're not sure how that's going to go. My big question is, are we making somehow an impact on the public? Why are they still anti-vaxxing? Where is the message going wrong? Is it a vacillation of concepts? Are we going back and forth and people don't understand Fauci or anybody else for that matter? Or locally, Dr. Amler in Westchester County or the Westchester County executive? What's going on?
Well, I mean, I think Dr. Amler has not been used enough. I mean, she makes rare appearances. Last week was one of her first appearances in a while with County Executive George Latimer, and she made a really good point about the K-12 vaccine, and she pointed out that of all the new cases in Westchester, 9% are children under 12.
Well,
that's a very big percentage. That means out of the 107 a day, you've got at least 10 or 11 children. More than that.
That's very frightening anyway. Are we engaging inoculating children from 5 to 12?
Are
we doing a good job with that?
Well, we are. They are now setting up things with school districts that request it, and we'll probably hear more about that today. But, I mean, there was that statement by the mayor-elect of New York City last week that he felt he should take away people should not wear masks in schools. I thought that was a very reckless statement. And I cannot see, particularly for New York City, taking away masks in schools if they haven't gotten most of the elementary school children vaccinated.
That's a very, very good point.
Yeah, I mean, he has to do that. But, I mean, unfortunately, this guy is going to come into office in January, and my feeling is he just wants to be popular, and that's why he would relax the school thing. Now, the problem with that in New York City, as big as it is that what you are going to see is if you're wrong, you are going to have to face a decision as to whether to go back to normal, back to protocols, remask in the schools and completely reverse the behavior again. That's going to be really hard for him to do or to enforce. You know, and
I think you're right on target with regard to that. That's for sure. Why can't our governments, whether it be local or county, in the metropolitan area, or even the state, why aren't we on the same page? Where's the disconnect? Is this part of the political process that's dividing us between different party lines? Does it make medical sense anymore not to be inoculated?
Well, I'll tell you this. The vaccinations do help in spreading it because over the last 6 weeks, I figured that we should have 2 to 3 weeks ago, we had about 557 people infected for the week, and they should have equaled 1,500 new infections.
Did I lose you, John? Well, you're there, but somehow or another. Okay, we'll see. Looks like John somehow at his end. He's on the line. Hello, John. I don't know, for some reason he
Hello?
Just doesn't
Still
seem
there.
To be there. Hi, John. Yeah, I don't Hi. Know what happened to you. I couldn't hear you.
Oh, I got another call in, and the phone, you know, switched to me to that. I mean, that's the whole problem with
I
these
see.
Phones. They do things that you don't want them to do. But anyway,
I know,
as
but
I was
that's
saying,
okay. It happened. 25%. So what were you saying?
We're reducing our spread to 25%. Because of the vaccinations. Mm-hmm. That is the spread rate now. And
wow.
that is the one piece of good news, despite the fact that nobody is being careful in Westchester. That's all I got to say. But I mean, the vaccinations definitely work, and that proves it, that if you are supposed to be spreading it at a lot more, and it's a lot less than you're supposed to be spreading it, according to the spread rate ratios, you know, that's good. About the only thing good.
Okay. Well,
so that's
you
the proof.
Something else. Yeah, definitely. But once
that's
I ask
proof
you about
that vaccines
else,
work.
Yeah, that's true, but I don't know why people are still reluctant to take it. I don't know.
They're reluctant because they're afraid of it, and they're listening to a lot of rhetoric from people that say they don't work and you could get it. I mean, they want to believe persons that have the louder voice.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I wanted to ask you about, this is the last week to take advantage of White Plains Restaurant Week. How's that going?
Well, that's a good question, because we never really get a good handle on how the restaurants did with these Restaurant Week promotions. Nobody does a survey.
Well, that's very interesting, because we never get that, that analysis
in
Yonkers either. And I don't even understand the purpose of that, because it should – you know, if we had some numbers, if we had some figures, it would also show that these efforts really revive and resuscitate an interest of the public going out there and taking a new taste, discovering a new restaurant, and why not? And the prices are good during these special.
They are and they aren't, because I went to a restaurant last week. And you could get a appetizer and an entree and a dessert for lunch, okay, for $25.
Well, that's not cheap.
No, it's not. And to my way of thinking, I'm not going to have an appetizer and a dessert with a lunch.
That's a little bit too much for the stomach.
Yeah.
Well,
and,
not if I want to keep my fit.
Well, that's just it. They put a high price on something you don't want anyway.
Right. Unbelievable. But
at least it was at the restaurant that I went to for a lunch, if you understand. But
I hear you.
But I mean,
so
this is a whole
is
promotion
important?
Business. We never get the results from any promotions that folks run. Now, the White Plains bid, it will say do have some measure of it, that when they did the holiday promotion last week through December into January, they got about 40 or 45 vendors, and the vendors are all coming back this year, if not more. So that's an indication that it was successful for the vendors, because they're not going to come back if they don't move merchandise. Yes. So,
well, you know what I don't, where I find it really undermining the whole process, especially like with the special, you know, food events at restaurant weeks, wherever they happen to be. If you don't tell us how many people have gone, basically, then what you're doing is you're undermining the whole effort. And more people say, oh, really? That must, it must be really doing well. So you might go to one restaurant or another and discover after the special restaurant week is over. They're doing themselves a disservice. And I don't understand why they don't recognize that.
Because information is power. And positive information is very good. But if you don't have positive information, you don't want to put out the facts of something that you are paying thousands of dollars to somebody to come up with in salary. It didn't work.
Well, got to ask you, when it comes to something like that, do they make an announcement, you know, in advance? Do they tell us in the media? I didn't get notice. Sometimes when they hold a special, restaurant week in Yonkers, they don't send a notice.
Well, that's because
they don't, really
they don't know how to promote.
Well.
They don't know how to promote. And they may sink money into with the print media, okay?
Yeah, but
and they may put it on
nobody
the,
looks
and,
to print anymore.
Yeah. No, but the print pays commissions to advertising agencies, and ad agencies love commissions. So that's where they tell
that's where
the
they
people who
the
want
money.
To advertise, that's where they put the money. And in fact, I would pay commissions. I've offered commissions to ad agencies, a huge commissions. They will do it.
Yeah.
Because why? Because actually people read my site.
Exactly.
Who are interested
exactly.
in
That's...
what they read on it. And I tell
exactly.
you, ads in print, you are really tough unless you go full page and or get
yeah,
in
a
special
lot of money.
Section. It's a lot of money. And it's foolish money spending
charge,
in print.
We don't charge. I think if you go to one of the local papers here in Westchester, I think it's $5,000 for a full page. But
yeah,
if
I think
they
that's
don't
about
have
right.
readership. They don't have readership. But the ad agency doesn't get the standard 15% commission because if they buy a lot, they get more than 15%. They may get 25%.
yeah.
And
yeah,
they may even get more.
It's anachronistic.
That's how desperate the print paper is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you
and
I both
what,
know it because we were both in advertising.
Right.
You more so than I.
But the other problem is the advertising is dumb. Couponing is a lost art. I would never run an ad in print without a coupon. And
that's a very good
or,
point.
Or a telephone number to call or bring this in and we'll save you money on your next meal, something like that. I don't see
mm-hmm.
a lot of that. I don't see a lot of that. And it's the direct marketing has the greatest tool ever right now in the internet. And even those ads aren't very smart. They just run on hits.
You know, John,
you know,
you've got your own you got your own TV show. Why don't you do a broadcast about advertising and best practice? Because you have a tremendous amount of knowledge and experience from the past. It could really teach White Plains and everybody else who would listen to your website about the program. That would be phenomenal.
Well.
You know,
well, there are a lot of things I should be doing, but there's just too much really important news. Yeah. Oh, that's another thing.
That's our number one issue.
Yeah. Aren't you tired of the way the media, particularly nationally and particularly locally in the New York City area, concentrates on overseas more than they do the local New York area?
Well,
they're
missing
a lot.
To some, they are missing a lot, but it's more difficult. We've been at this for over 20 years, both you and I.
Yes. I know. It's amazing.
It really is amazing. I don't know where time flew. I've been having fun. I know that you have as well. But the thing is,
nothing makes me feel better. You know, I did a story on how the nine counties surrounding New York City's five boroughs, okay, which have much less population than New York City, those nine counties, including Westchester, had more infections than New York City for three or four days last week. That story got 3,770 hits.
That's phenomenal.
The most hits I ever got on any story in 20 years. So people realized this was a huge story.
Yeah, but don't you realize, and I hope you realize this is very important. I've been telling you this for a long time. What you're doing, uncovering the COVID crisis in Westchester County, bar none, nobody is doing the job that you're doing. Nobody.
Well, thanks.
Because maybe they can't add one and one.
But it's so easy. It doesn't take any intelligence. It just takes adding up the numbers, looking at how they're going, and doing baseball statistics.
But then, you know, if it's so easy, how come you're the only one doing it and nobody else is? We're even talking in New York Times or the Post or whatever.
It makes
the
officials look bad, because if you've noticed, the officials are always saying, well, we're holding our own, we're not going up, we have thousands less than a year ago. Well, it doesn't matter what you have a year ago. It matters what you have now and what the trend is. And nobody really wants to tell you the truth about the trend, because people are not behaving themselves when they're out there. In public, they're going to too many socializations without masks, and that's what's spreading it. And the townies particularly are so easy. Oh, we have to get back to normal and the new normal. There is no normal anymore.
You know what I read, which was which I spoke about in the first before I got you, in France, which is very interesting. If you don't get inoculated, but you're over 65 and you're covered by, you know, health insurance and stuff, just like we are here, there's Medicare and Medicaid. If you don't get inoculated, they're going to tell you that after a certain point, you lose your insurance completely. I think that's a brilliant move.
That is draconian, but
it may be
the only thing they understand.
Well, I think
they would understand
that. You know, isn't it a little bit too late when you're sick, you know, to say, oh, I should have been inoculated when you're on a ventilator, and it's going to cost the government a ton of money? So I think it's a smart move. I love it.
Well, it has to be enforced, though.
I think they will. Well, I don't know if it's
and it has to be done
mistake.
Swiftly. Government doesn't do anything swiftly. And
well, the French are a little bit better than we are, I guess, when it comes to that.
Right. However, the story you tell about, isn't it a little too late to say I should have gotten vaxxed? That's what happened to a friend, a longtime broadcaster, who was anti-vax, did not get the vaccine, caught COVID, and he died. And before he died, he told his friend, I made a mistake.
I'm sorry.
Famous last
lost,
words.
But,
I made a mistake.
Yeah. Well, John, we've got to let you go. Unfortunately, we're going to move on to Mr. Edelman, who's already on the line. What a pleasure, as always. Thank you
Very
so
timely.
Much.
Very timely.
Be well. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. So long for now, everyone. Bye.
Okay. Good morning. Oh, let me see. Let me pull him in. Good morning, Mr. Edelman. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, thank God. Okay, now that I have you on, I feel much better. Well, there are a lot of things that are going on, and I want to first introduce you. You're a political analyst as well as a pundit on the national level, which is really terrific. And one of the points I wanted to discuss with you, and that's Biden's polling numbers. Why are they tanking? Where is this coming
from? Well, yeah. This is coming from independents in swing states that elected him who are very disappointed in the Afghanistan pullout, and they're overwhelmed with the existing inflation that we are undergoing in food and automobiles and other things that you must buy. And they blame it on Joe Biden, even though you really can't blame inflationary spirals or deflationary spirals on the person who's president, because it's a function of supply and demand. We're looking at a situation where we've got container ships that can't dock coming from Asia with the goods that people ordered while they were staying home with coronavirus lockdowns. So they spent a lot of money. They got their physical checks, their $1,400, their $1,200 checks. They saved it and they spent it. And now they can't get the goods. I know I have had a golf club on order for 5 months. That's something that normally you get in a day and a half. Okay? And they told me there are supply line issues. So these ships are moving around and they can't come into port because they can't get the containers that are already in the port onto trucks to get them to warehouses to distribute them to the retailers. And as a result, you have price gouging going on. Who is price gouging? Probably the owners of the ships, who see an opportunity for a windfall profit because they can't meet the demand and prices are going up. So the average guy who can't get his goods ordered gets frustrated, and when he finds out he has to pay another 10, 20, or 30% for those same goods, he blames it on Joe Biden, and that's where we are. Now, that doesn't say that cannot be corrected, because the polling also showed that 70% of Americans are in favor of the infrastructure bill that just passed, and 55% of Americans are in favor of what's in his Build Back Better bill. So one of the other reasons that Joe Biden's numbers have tanked is he cannot seem to deliver on what he promised, although the infrastructure bill has now been signed. So that's changed. If they can get the Build Back Better bill done without this nonsense about the left wanting this and the conservatives wanting that, if they just pass it, they'll have a lot better polling numbers the next time they do polling.
Well, hasn't the squad been marginalized, unbelievably so, last week when there were, I think, 10 Republicans that decided to side with the Democrats, and the bills are passing? So, you know, this whole idea of this very progressive, you know, America keeps forgetting that this progressive movement is too much of a jump. We're an incremental country. Things go incrementally. They don't happen, you know, like an avalanche all of a sudden. And we forget that. That's the process. Isn't that the way it was set up by the Constitution when we were founded?
That's quite true.
I'm always amazed. I'm always amazed by that. Does it look, I mean, is it logical for people to blame Biden for all of these issues?
No. It's not logical, but it's a
fact. So why are we blaming it? Is it political? Is it politics?
Well, you have, yes, partially you have Fox News and Breitbart News and other right-wing media that are pounding on him every day. And that translates into people watching, the viewers, into saying it's Biden's fault. Yes, it reminds me of an old joke that my father used to tell me back in the 1930s. Guy was lost a lot of money in the stock market, and he went to the racetrack, tried to make some of it back, and he bet on a horse, and the horse came in dead last. And he turned around to his friend and he said, "Son of a bitch, Roosevelt." So basically, that's what you got. That's what you got here. You got people blaming Biden because Sean Hannity says it's his fault.
Okay, okay. Well, that's a great story about your father. I'm glad he related to you. So here it comes up years later. That's fantastic. Well, I wanted to ask you about something else, about the January 6th insurrection, and the close confidant of Trump, Bannon himself, and others. Mm-hmm. You know, they're being found complicit with everything that took place. Is this the beginning of the end of the entire Trump, conduct? Is this going to be exposed now? It's taken a while to get here. It's almost a year.
That's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to that. All I know is that Steve Bannon and others want to deconstruct what they believe is the deep state. They haven't respected the ability of the Congress to subpoena witnesses. And as a result, since they haven't, he's going to be arraigned. He's probably been arraigned already this morning because he's been indicted.
Mm-hmm.
He's been indicted by a grand jury in Washington. And now he's going to be facing jail. So he may want to be a martyr. He may continue to say, I'm not going to cooperate. That's his right to do, but his right is also to go to jail.
Yes. Well, that's where he's going if he decides to say, I'm not going to talk.
Yep,
well,
that's exactly right. Then you have others who have been subpoenaed as well, like Mark Meadows. Okay, Mark Meadows was the senior chief of staff who was the linchpin in this business about getting these dumb lawyers who wrote these road to coup memos, how to do a coup with the Constitution in place, totally unconstitutional, by the way, what they were advocating. And so he has knowledge also as to who said what when and what Donald Trump did while the protest was going on. He apparently cheered on and said it was common sense, according to Jonathan Carl in his new book, Betrayal, common sense to want to hang Mike Pence, his vice president. Imagine?
I didn't read the book, but I know that you were going to bring that up. I'm just astounded by it.
He didn't care. He didn't care.
Yeah.
He did not care that his own vice president, who had stood by him for 4 years, was going to be lynched by an angry mob because he wanted to retain power.
You know, it blows my mind how someone like Trump, or anybody for that matter, could have behaved as he did. What went wrong with him? Was he like this before in his business conduct?
He's always been a bully. And he's always been a narcissist. If you're a narcissistic bully, you're not going to care about anybody else, just yourself.
No. Well, what's always been interesting is that you always recognized that aspect of his behavior and his constitution, so to speak, excuse the term.
Yep.
But you were so astute about that. But is there a reluctance to speak truth to power in our society?
I believe the people that are following Donald Trump don't care about his personal characteristics. They don't care that he's a liar. They don't care that he's a bully. They don't care that he's a narcissist. The only thing they believe is that he's a vehicle that God sent here to protect their white Christian power, which is what this is all about. This is no longer about politics, no longer about Democrats and Republicans. It's no longer about ideas and policy. For the Trump supporters, it's about protecting their status as white Christian nationalists and denying power to black and brown minorities because demographics are changing.
Black and brown people, they're also Christian. I mean, how could you even?
They're not white Christians. They're not white.
And that's the difference? It's just because they're not white? But they prayed as the same God, God help us.
Correct. But they're not white. And the white Christian evangelical, they are losing, they believe they are losing their position, their stature, their social position, if black and brown people have the majority. And so they are hanging on to this no matter what.
You know, it's so very interesting. As a Jew, I'm informed on different issues, which might actually help the white Christians put it together, because we've got Jews all over the world, whether they be in India or in Iran or in Israel or in Egypt or in Morocco or in South America or in China. You know, the point is, it doesn't matter. They're Jewish, you know, so you have a sensibility about it, and we all read the same book. Maybe not every week or every day, but maybe once a year, whatever. So, and you could be either very orthodox or not orthodox at all, but it's in your blood to some extent, because you know that's part of your heritage, and that allows us to be together. You know, wherever you go, you're welcome because you're a Jew. You know, to a Jewish home, you may not be welcome elsewhere, but that's a different issue. But
no,
you know, maybe
I get
maybe that's a page that's good for, you know, white Christians. So the black Christians are okay too. And
well,
and
Jews were never
whatever.
But you know, Jews were never concerned with retaining power because they had none.
Oh, that's true. Didn't think about that.
Okay.
Very astute of you.
They were always bottom of the barrel. They were relegated to selling goods in the street or other kinds of work that weren't compatible with what the majority in whatever country they were in were doing.
Right.
This is not the case with white nationalists. Mm. White nationalists see their power. You remember the Charlottesville march, where they marched and they said, Jews will not replace us. Jews will not replace us. So what's that all about, right? Jews are white, but they're not considered white. They're considered Jews, which can't be white. The only people that are white are white Christian evangelicals. Those are white people.
Mm.
And they want to retain control of government and control of their local lives, and they view the coming demographic change as an existential threat to that.
Uh-huh.
Just saying.
But aren't they also sequestering themselves to the point when you realize that the nation is changing and the demographics are changing, so whether they like it or not, it's here to stay? Aren't they going to lose out?
When it happens. No, because they understand that the way the Constitution was written and the way the framers dissected power, that was extremely possible for the minorities to control the agenda, to control the majority.
Right.
Look what happened with the Supreme Court. They put on Amy Coney Barrett. They put on Kavanaugh. They put on Gorsuch. And these people do not represent a majority of the people in the nation, but because every state has two senators, no matter how many people are in that state, it skews toward ultra-conservative red states with small populations. Wyoming has 800,000 people. It's got the same two senators that New York has with 26 million.
Mm-hmm.
And the same can be said for states like Missouri and Mississippi, Arkansas and Oklahoma, Idaho and Montana. They're sparsely populated areas of the nation that were given the same electoral and legislative clout as the cities and the urban areas and the suburban areas. So that's where the United States system falls down. Because if the majority becomes, I mean, the last election it was 8 million. What if it's 20 million? What is this? What if the Democrat has 20 million more votes than the Republican, but the Republican still wins because he wins all the red states?
Mm.
What about that?
It's a good question. It's a really good question. Well, I want to ask you about one other thing. When Nancy Pelosi got enough votes from the Republican side of the aisle to
pass
endorse
the
$1 trillion infrastructure bill.
Yeah.
The Ocasio-Cortez and the squad lost out. I had no idea that that Pelosi was so adept at doing this sort of stuff. But doesn't that also undermine the entire progressive wing of the Democrats? You know, like Ocasio-Cortez and others, are they going to be able to survive politically for a reelection effort because their community is not going to get anything?
Well, no, they did get something because the infrastructure bill is going to benefit. What they were doing, they were using that bill. They weren't really opposed to the bill. They were using that bill as or their failure to support the bill as leverage to get what they wanted on the other bill, on the Build Back Better bill.
No,
that's what they were doing.
Yes, I didn't explain myself right, but the people that are represented by these type of people with this sort of demeanor, they wanted to push their agenda further. However, it failed, and by failing it, and they voted against the infrastructure bill, which would have helped their community. Where does it?
The fact of the matter is that the infrastructure bill passed. Well, yeah,
exactly.
But you know what? To beat them in those districts isn't going to be easy in a primary. What are they going to argue? You voted against the bill to get us a better bill, and we got the bill anyway. So what happened was 13 Republicans joined the Democrats and passed the bill, and those 13 Republicans are being given death threats by Sean Hannity's viewers because they would rather cripple Biden. In other words, deprive Joe Biden of a win. They would rather do that than fix the roads and bridges and tunnels that had no problem passing in the Senate. The Senate passed it overwhelmingly, and that is a 50-50 body. There were plenty of Republicans in the Senate that voted for it. But in the House, okay, it's a tribal situation. So you're either with us or against us. You know, and once you vote to give the Democrats a win, you're a traitor. And that's exactly what happened.
Uh-huh. Wow. Well, one other last point probably, because that'll be probably the time we'll have left. Hill reports that Republicans appear to be headed for a substantial gain in next year's midterm elections. Why do you think that's coming about?
Well, because
or do you think
Joe Biden...
it will peter out over time?
Well, I don't know. I don't know the answers there. All I can tell you is that Joe Biden's numbers are pulling the whole party down. The head of the party, the guy who's in the White House, and it is generally what happens after there's a Democratic, after there's a win by one party, they usually lose the House in the next midterm election. That is not unusual.
Okay.
That is not unusual at all. But if he snaps back because of the Build Back Better bill, and if the Afghanistan thing becomes old news, you very well might see that the difference between generic Republicans and generic Democrats disappears in 2022. This is the largest, by the way, difference between generic ballots that's ever been recorded. It's 11 points. So they ask the question, you know, who generically, who would you prefer, Democrat or Republican? And that's what they got. That's the answer they got.
Oh, that's amazing. Wow. So I guess, you know, like I'm not quite sure. What I wanted to ask you lastly is, with regard to inflation, you brought that up before. Does the Federal Reserve have any input with regard to that? Is that their job?
Yes, the Federal Reserve. Well, yeah, the Federal Reserve raises and lowers interest rates. The last time we had runaway inflation and stagflation, McChesney Martin, I believe, was the head of the Fed, and he stepped in and he raised interest rates, and that's the way how you have to cause a recession. Actually, that's the way to do it. The way you get runaway inflation is to step in and cause a recession.
Yeah, and is that likely that the Fed's going to be doing that?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I don't think they're going to do that, because I think this inflation will get under control in about 6 to 9 months.
Okay. I didn't realize that as well.
As soon as they figure out how to get the goods off these ships and to the warehouses so they can distribute them, as soon as they figure that out, I think the inflation will subside.
Well, one thing I noticed about a week or so ago, they said that more people have left their jobs or retired. Why are people retiring? Is there a rationale for that? Is that caused by the economy? I couldn't understand how you could retire.
Well, some people have saved enough money so that when they're in their early 50s, they can retire. School teachers in New York, I believe if they have 25 years in, they get their pension. So if you started when you were 23 and you're 50 and you're 48 or 40, you get a pension, you leave. People didn't want to go to work.
Yeah, exactly.
They decided they could work from home. They didn't need to go to an office. And if they were required to go to an office, they said, you know what, I'm not going to the office. I'll stay around.
Okay.
And that's what they're doing.
So that's what's happening.
And a lot of young people just said, you know what, screw it. I don't want to do this anymore. And maybe their parents have enough money to keep them from starving to death, which is probably the case.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. So do you think, well, I guess we don't know. It's too soon to tell exactly how that's going to affect our economy. I do remember a friend of mine's daughter. I don't know the daughter. I know this older gentleman. He's my age. But his daughter wanted to buy a car, and she ended up buying a Mercedes. It took 5 months to get the car. It's unbelievable. That's how long the delay is.
Abroad. And used car prices are going through the roof too, because
that's what I heard.
I sold my son's car to Carvana. They came to the house.
Yeah.
Right. They looked at the car.
Yeah.
They gave me a price. They paid me $3,000 more than I paid for the car 3 years ago.
Yeah, I heard things like that. I was amazed that that was happening. And then I was reading General Motors, because they don't have chips, they don't even tell you this, but there's no more what they need those chips for is, one of them is to heat the seats during the winter, but they don't have the right chips, so that's no longer included in the car. So it's truly amazing happening.
Or they deliver the car without the chip.
Yes, they deliver the car without the chip.
You get the car, you have to wait for the chip until it's available.
Is that how that works? So they could stick the chip in later?
That's right. We'll give you the chip when it comes in. No worries.
Okay. Boy, there's always a way around things if you could think it out. Very interesting.
It
really is. Wanted to ask you about this last thing. The Daily Kos published that the FBI charged Evan Newman with 6 crimes, including assaulting officers and violent entry, and they identified him on camera as being an active participant in the January 6th anti-democracy insurrection at the Capitol. And he's now fled to Belarus, of all places, my God.
Yes, he has.
So now, you know, this is insanity. People look to Belarus as a place for, you know, to hide out.
Apparently, this guy must have family or something in Belarus. Who goes to Belarus?
Or they made a deal. Yeah, I guess
well, that's so. Probably true. Nobody in their right mind. That's the answer. But he went.
Well,
so
go ahead.
He must have contacts there. You just don't go to Belarus, of all places.
Yeah,
it's also it hasn't got an extradition treaty, right?
Oh, I never thought of that. Well, there are so many people stuck in Belarus, and they come from all over the Middle East, and they're trying to get into Poland through Belarus, of all places. That place is turned into a hellhole. Unbelievable.
I bet you the restaurants
Belarus.
Are doing really well. Belarus.
Probably.
It's near Ukraine, right? Isn't it near Ukraine?
Yes, it
Belarus?
Is. Yes, it is. Well, that's the other thing. The Russians have over 100,000 troops on the Ukrainian border. Conceivably going to invade.
I think it's extremely
the Germans
possible.
Germans are going crazy. Yeah,
I
Merkel
know.
Is saying,
well, you know,
back off.
Well, Putin wants to be, he wants to be somebody. You know, Russia doesn't make anything.
Really?
Their GDP is about the size of New Jersey. So they manufacture nothing. The USSR fell, and Putin is a former KGB agent that isn't happy that his country is not what it was, and he wants to restore it to its previous glory. That's the short and the long of it. And, you know, so he rattles, they do have a military, and then they do have a bomb, so he rattles the sword.
Yep.
You know, he's a saber rattler. And I don't know.
Well, I guess
go ahead. You
finish
there?
Your thought, and you don't know what, frankly?
No, I don't know if he actually intends on invading, because he understands that there's a NATO alliance, and that once that's triggered, the United States has to get into the act.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure he's ready to do that, huh?
I don't think so. There was a time when Russia was like the fulcrum or the other side of the equation from the United States.
Yeah.
But then China came about, and for the last 20 years, they certainly have eclipsed Russia. So Russia's still in the doldrums. I don't know where you count them on the economic plane, but China's number one, America's number
and
two,
Russia,
and I don't know
Russia's
where they
are.
Russia's
not even number three. They're not number three.
Exactly.
Not in GDP.
Yeah.
I mean, Germany's
no, not
big. Germany's
at all.
Bigger, right? Germany's
Absolutely.
Bigger. Britain is bigger.
Yes. So I guess
they lost out.
They made nothing. Amazing, amazing. So, and Putin must remember, he's old enough to remember that history. Well,
yes,
that's his issue. Yes.
Regrets it.
Yeah.
Because he thinks
unbelievable.
There still should be a Russia. So it's the U.S., China, Japan, Germany, United Kingdom, India, France, Italy, Canada, Korea.
Exactly.
Doesn't even show up.
It doesn't show up.
Yeah, Russia is 11th.
It's truly amazing. Amazing. Well, it's something to think about.
Yep.
Really? Barely in front of Australia and Brazil? That's frightening.
Yep.
Holy
exactly
shit.
Right. Exactly. Holy shit.
Well,
so, you know, they've been relegated. They've been relegated to backbenching.
Exactly. Well, any last words from you, Michael?
No, I don't have any last words, except my son is in Costa Rica. That's all I can tell you. Don't ask me
Good
why.
For him. Well, it's beautiful, I hear. I've never been there.
Yeah. No,
unbelievably beautiful country.
Yeah,
yeah, that's what I've heard.
Drinking coffee with the monkeys in the mountains.
Hey, that's where everybody goes. It's a beautiful It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, they got great
hotels
there, actually. I was looking. But I digress. Go ahead.
I don't know. And they got beautiful looking women, too.
Yeah, that's why he's there. So.
Oh, okay. Good for him. Yeah. All right, listen, all the best to you. Thanks for making
Thank
me time,
you.
As always.
You're
My
welcome.
Pleasure. Be well. Bye, sir.
You too.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye. Oh, there we have it. None other than national political analyst and pundit, none other than Michael Edelman. Always a pleasure to talk to him. He's so aware and so well-read on top of everything else, and I love his capacity in language, which just makes it so clear, at least for me, and I'm sure to our listeners as well. Well, let's just see if we can cover a couple of more things on the international level. And one split second. One split second here. I wanted to go over some other concerns. This is really very frightening as well. The United Kingdom, the police in the United Kingdom say that a Liverpool taxi, Liverpool is a city, taxi blast was a terrorist incident. Seems that an explosive device that blew up a taxi in the northern English city of Liverpool on Sunday, carried on board by a passenger, and the blast is being treated as a terrorist incident, police said today. Well, police said they believed they knew the identity of the passenger who was killed by the explosion, but could not disclose it. Although the motivation for this incident is yet to be understood, given all the circumstances, it's been declared a terrorist incident and counterterrorism policing are continuing with the investigation. That's what the Assistant Chief Constable Russ Jackson of Counterterrorism Policing Northwest had said. Well, the taxi exploded outside of Liverpool Women's Hospital, killing the passenger and injuring the driver, who received medical treatment but has since been released. Remarkably, the taxi driver escaped from the cab, Jackson had said. Three men, aged 29, 26, and 21, were arrested on Sunday, and police said on Monday another man, aged 20, had been arrested. Well, Jackson told reporters that the taxi driver had picked up the passenger, who had asked to be driven to the hospital. He said it was unclear why he wanted to go to the hospital or what had caused the sudden explosion of the device. Well, the explosion took place a minute before the start of a Remembrance Day service to commemorate the war dead at nearby Liverpool Cathedral. We are, of course, aware that there were remembrance events such just a short distance away from the hospital, and that the ignition occurred shortly before 11 a.m., Jackson had said. So, quoting him, we cannot at this point or at this time draw any connection with this, but it is a line of inquiry which we are pursuing. My God, you know, it seems there's a resurgence of these sort of incidents that are taking place, which is interesting. And this is very interesting when we were talking about Belarus. Evidently, the Kremlin is denying involvement, and now they claim they're going to offer to help resolve the Belarus migrant crisis. Well, the Kremlin on Monday, that's today, said that Russia was ready to mediate in the migrant crisis between its close ally, Belarus, which they've been supporting in the European Union, and that Moscow was already doing so to an extent. Well, the European Union has accused Belarus of mounting a hybrid attack, quote-unquote, on it by flying in thousands of migrants, mainly from the Middle East, and pushing them to try to cross illegally into Poland. Well, the Kremlin has denied any Russian role in the crisis, but Putin offered to help resolve it on Sunday. This is the way Putin operates. Deny, 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 and then he's going to come in and help. Asked on Monday how Russia saw itself contributing, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov had said, quote, exclusively as a negotiating intermediary, which is already happening, end quote. So on a conference call with reporters, Peskov also dismissed as wrong, quote unquote, a statement by the U.S. State Department that Belarus's actions on the border with the European Union aim to distract from Russian military activities close to Ukraine. Well, you know, again, deny, deny, deny. Well, anyway, Ukraine has said that there are nearly 100,000 Russian soldiers near its border, and the United States has issued warnings over possible Russian aggression. So we're going to have to see where all that goes. And let's just see what else is happening on the world stage. One second. One minute here. Where am I? Okay. Now, one thing to reflect back, the new Glasgow Climate Pact offers some breakthroughs, but also, quote, deep disappointment. Just in case you haven't recognized this, this will be the last thing we'll do today. The gavel finally came down on the extended COP, COP26 climate summit in Glasgow late Saturday night. A deal was reached, dubbed the Glasgow Climate Pact, which was welcomed by some, but criticized by many others for not going far enough. The much anticipated two-week COP26 climate conference in Scotland delivered a major victory on Saturday night when it resolved international rules around carbon markets with a belated agreement of the Glasgow Climate Pact more than 24 hours after the initial COP26 deadline had passed. But it left vulnerable countries in limbo about long-promised financial support from richer nations. The 10-page deal was struck after both India and China asked for Article 36 of the pact to remove a reference to, quote, phasing out fossil fuel subsidies and coal, a watered-down version calling instead for, quote, phasing down, end quote, coal usage was passed on Saturday night. Well, India's environment and climate minister, Bhupender Yadav, said that the revision reflected the, quote, national circumstances of emerging economies, end quote. Continuing, we have made our effort to make a consensus that is reasonable for developing countries and reasonable for climate justice, he said, alluding to the fact that rich nations historically have emitted the largest share of greenhouse gases. Quote, it is still quite historic that fossil fuels are being mentioned in this final version of the COP26 resolution, as no COP text has ever mentioned fossil fuels, even though they are responsible for 90% of greenhouse gas emissions, said Valerie DeKimpe, an environmental editor at France 24. Well, the essentials of the Glasgow Climate Pact. The pact is not legally binding, but it sets the global agenda on climate change for the next decade. It asks countries to replace their 2030 national climate action targets with more ambitious emission reductions by the end of next year. It also asks them to comply with standards set by the 2015 Paris Agreement, which asked countries to make changes to keep global warming, quote, well below, end quote, 2 degrees centigrade and aim for 1.5 degrees centigrade by the end of 2022 to prevent climate catastrophe. Before COVID-26, the world was on track for a 2.7 degrees centigrade rise in temperatures by the end of the century. And this is a fragile win. We can now say that we have kept 1.5% centigrade degree alive, but the pulse is weak and it will only survive if we keep our promise and translate commitments into rapid action, said Alok Sharma, the president of COVID-26. What a lot of people don't understand is, think of the earth as if it were an oven. It takes time to heat up. Well, it's taken years and years, centuries and centuries, over time, and as the earth developed and animals grew and evolved, and human beings as well, and then we got a capacity to control our environment better, we created all sorts of mechanisms that brought about heat, coal, fossil fuels, and so on and so forth. But just like an oven, once you heat it up, you can't expect it, even if you do nothing and stop polluting the atmosphere, stop using fossil fuels, stop using coal, stop using everything that is imaginable, it's going to take decades for the earth to reduce the heat that's created a rise in our sea levels and so on and so forth. And what's most appalling by the COP26, no more than previous ones as well, is that those people on the front line that would explain to us, regular people, and not politicians who are also not well-versed in science, who have eclipsed the science and said, well, we can do this and we can do that, but we're not going to do the best practice because we can't or we don't want to, and so on and so forth. So talk is cheap, and conduct and behavior is not, and we're going to have to see where this goes. But I accuse the entire ecological input that we should have had for many, many years, and which we haven't gotten. I haven't been listening to what's her name, Thunberg, the young Scandinavian girl who's now an adult, who's been at the forefront, and she keeps saying, with regard to our politicians, all they could say is blah, 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 but get nowhere. And because I haven't, Greta Thunberg, I haven't been following her completely. I've read a couple of things and followed her in that sense, but not where I listen to everything that she says. And I don't know if she's been telling people what we've been missing hearing from people who are involved in the ecological study of our climate, the climate changes, what causes it, how and when it can go down, if at all, and it's going to take decades to start to see a change, and that's only if we change the dynamic where we stop using fossil fuels. Can we stop using fossil fuels? I don't know what we can do. There are all kinds of issues that are coming about. People are thinking about green hydrogen. I guess that means taking hydrogen and somehow splitting it from the splitting oxygen from the hydrogen, so creating, a power or source of power from splitting the atom. I'm not exactly sure because I haven't caught up on that, but that seems to be something that will eventually come about. I don't think that we can bring about even the hoped for 1.5%, we won't be able to reach that because it will take time for the earth cool down. And that is the problem that is never spoken or has not been spoken about, which is really very interesting. you know, developed countries say they would phase out coal in the 2030s. Well, that means if they're going to phase out coal in the 2030s and developing countries committing to a later timeline of 2040, Australia notably did not commit to phasing out the use of coal at all. So even at least 20 countries, including Italy, Canada, the U.S., and Denmark, along with public financial institutions, promised to stop financing overseas fossil fuel industries by the end of 2022, diverting the cash into clean energy instead. Well, that's wonderful, but it's still going to take forever, I don't know how many decades, for the temperature to become lower. And when the oceans heat up, which they are, they destroy, the atolls and the wildlife that is supported and the structure of the atolls that bring in fish who hide out there and breed there and so on. They get destroyed. And so the calcium is destroyed by the heating. And so you got bleaching, and you kill these animals that are now surviving. But as temperatures rise, everything is going to die. From the smallest amoebas in the ocean that are surviving presently to the biggest animals in the waters, which are our whales and our sharks and stuff like that. Everything is going to fall apart. And then that becomes a question, well, can we survive if this happens? And I don't know if we can. So I always wondered if there was a rationale to why we're exploring, you know, getting people to Mars, you know, creating a colony of people on Mars. Look, we messed up the Earth seemingly in a very, very bad way. My concern is not for the children that are already alive, you know, like even people who are in their 20s or 30s, their children are going to suffer the calamity of not doing enough quickly enough with regard to the heating a planet. And I don't believe that people will have many children. I'm sure we're going to see a drop-off birth rate across the world, because people will not want to raise a child in the atmosphere, and that will overwhelm the world, the globe. And I don't know what we're going to do. It's a frightening circumstance. I can't even imagine what people in their 20s and 30s who are our future, they're already in all modalities of science and technology and even in politics and so on and so forth. But we've got to work together to fix this thing, and we've got to fix it fast enough. Waiting for 2020 or 2030 or 2040, 2050 is not going to make it work, because if you're waiting to 2050, we're now at 2021, you're looking at a child who's 20 now, will be 50 then. You know, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work, because they're not going to have children. I don't think they're going to even consider it. And who knows what the populations will do. But the populations will decline at the end, maybe with less people polluting. That may end up and less need for all sorts of fossil fuels and other other things that undermine the ecology, that's going to tell us a great deal. So we'll see where all that goes. Well, I guess at this point, let me quickly look. One second here. I hope I haven't disconnected something. No, we're not. Well, I guess that's the end of our time with you today. We're going to speak to you tomorrow to having Brendan Beery and Jeff Swartz. Both of them are professors at CMU Cooley College, Tampa campus in Florida. And we talk to them about the Constitution. I hope you'll join us tomorrow at 10 o'clock when we do. And they're always a thrill to talk to. So have a great day. Thanks for joining us today. And I guess that's about it. You know what? I'd like to actually play a commercial for you. You may want to go away, but I always love this commercial from the Cabot Creamery. Listen to this, and we'll be right back.
Hey, you a judge?
Sorta. I report on cheese. I don't judge.
Well, I heard on the radio Cabot Cheddar always wins awards for taste.
Well, let me see my notes. Best taste? Check. Best texture? Check. The farm families in Cabot, Vermont have won every major award in the cheese world.
Every award?
Every.
What about the U.S. Cheese Championship?
Cabot's won that many times.
How about the American Cheese Society Contest?
Cabot won it.
World Cheese Championship Award?
Best in class on cheddar.
Fiery Food Challenge?
Cabot.
International Fancy Food Show?
Cabot rules.
The Stanley Cup?
That's hockey.
Oh.
Look, Cabot's won awards for best sharp, best light, best butter, and best cheddar.
Yeah, but a certain big cheese company's TV ad show, they won an award from judges wearing bright yellow lab coats.
Oh, those are actors.
Not real judges?
Real judges wear white lab coats.
They do.
Look, Cabot is best because they own the company, ship the milk, make the cheese. They won so many times, the real judges even asked one of Cabot's cheesemakers to be a judge.
I don't believe you.
Here, taste.
Hey, I can taste why Cabot's won every award.
You be the judge.
And I get to wear a yellow lab coat.
White lab coat. Check.
The best tasting cheddar on the planet is...
Time and time again.
Cabot Cheddar.
Check.
Well, thanks for allowing me to play that commercial. I just haven't heard it for over a month while we were trying to do the podcasting thing, and I just happened to love it. Anyway, all the best to you. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Thanks for your indulgence. Be well. Stay safe. Take care and goodbye.